Welcome to Parents Perspective. Bart, age 4, was playing happily in the backyard with his friends. Judy, his mom, ran inside for her camera. When she returned, a very different scene was taking place. Bart's friends were busy digging in the garden, but her own son was busy packing his mouth so full of dirt that he could not close it. After she took a few deep breaths and completed the excavation, Judy asked him why he had done such a thing. "Mom," Bart responded matter-of-factly, "I wanted to see how much dirt my mouth could hold." From a parent's perspective, what are some effective ways to give our children education about nature without necessarily a mouthful of dirt? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Today, we are delighted to have as our guest a mom who is genuinely committed to nature education. Jacqueline Isle is Director of Education at Discovery Creek Children's Museum of Washington, D.C. She has been a museum educator for 11 years and has a master's degree in teaching from George Washington University. As the mother of 1 2-year-old son with another on the way, Ms. Isle has personally confirmed her long-held beliefs that children learn best when knee-deep in dirt and mud. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Jackie.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Most parents are not nature educators or botanists or biologists, geologists, chemists, or natural scientists, or even residents of the D.C. area where we have access to Discovery Creek. And in fact, some parents are quite squeamish about plants, bugs, chemicals, and so forth. What kinds of early nature experiences can parents provide at home for their young children?
I think the first thing that a parent needs to do is open the door to their house and walk outside. And actually, sometimes this can happen inside because we find lots of bugs inside of our house. And the question is, how do we treat those insects that we find in our house? What do we say? Should we start there? But I think mainly your first step is starting from the walk around the neighborhood, which we all do with our young children, and the kinds of questions you can ask your child that gets them engaged in the world around them, whether it be, is that dirt wet or dry? Is it mushy? How do you think it got that way? Did you hear the rain last night? Do you think the rain is still in the dirt? Look at that worm over there. Now, you might not want to touch the worm, but I guarantee your child will. And the question is, trying to keep yourself positive and encouraging your child to get dirty and not to be afraid that this is a bad thing. I encounter many parents who say, I don't really want to touch that worm or that insect or that snake or whatever it is that we at the museum are showing children. But we try to work with parents to realize that it's important that they not pass those fears on to their child. And sometimes, well, often, parents will be able to see through the eyes of their own child, and some of those fears will be broken down because they'll see that children are approaching the world around them from a sense of wonder, not from a sense of fear.
I remember when my children were little, I happened not to like lightning and thunder very much, but I didn't want them to be frightened. And so we used to go and sit by the window and watch, and I would say, oh, isn't it beautiful? Isn't it, you know, this and that? And I would think, oh, please let it be over. But they were never scared of lightning and thunder.
Right.
We had a dog who was, but they weren't.
The parents that bring their children to Discovery Creek are parents who are willing to try their best to really hold that back and to let their child explore. And then often, once we establish a comfort level for parents, they will put one finger out and maybe touch the snake down its back because it's fun. It's interesting. And if you can try to learn an important fact or an interesting context for that animal, you become much more engaged in it rather than seeing it as a pest or as something that's slimy or icky.
My husband loves nature and he loves bugs. So I have raised 3 sons in a household where if you see a bug, you don't scream and holler and step on it because they get very angry. And I learned from them to put a plastic cup over it and a piece of paper under it and carry it nicely outside and free it to the world it belongs in.
That's right.
And it was a real education for me. Now, if any of them are home, I will say, will you come and rescue this bug? It's not my favorite thing to do.
Right. And I, in fact, we have a 7-foot boa constrictor at the museum that when I first started my job at Discovery Creek 3 years ago, I have to admit I did not come from an environmental background. I have an appreciation for the natural world. I like to go camping. But a 7-foot boa constrictor was a little intimidating for me. And I took it very slowly. I let the animal handlers that we work with show me different aspects of the animal's habitat and how to hold it. And I watched for a long time. And sure enough, now I love this snake. I have a comfort level with this snake that I never thought I'd have. And I really feel that the animals that we use in our programs are really like my own children now. I nurture them. We actually don't name them because the message that we want to send to children is that these are animals that are part of the natural world. And in fact, they are. They've been rescued and rehabilitated, and that's why they're in our care. They cannot be released. They're not pets. But we do have a real sense of love for them. And I am shocked at myself now that I can put a 7-foot, I'm proud of myself that I can put a 7-foot boa constrictor around my neck and just walk around. And this snake has helped me. He taught me that it's okay and that I should not be frightened and that we have to be gentle with our children and our parents and bringing them into this world and realize that it's new to them. But once we do, there's a real comfort level there, and the appreciation is increased manyfold.
This is not something you would recommend to parents to go out and get at the pet store, however.
No. And as I said, the animals that we use in our programs are rescued animals. They all have a story as to why they needed to be rescued. And often it has to do with the balance between the natural and the urban environment and animals trying to live in an environment where humans have built. And that balance that we try to strike, we use that as a spark for learning for children to understand what pets might not be a good idea.
I'm sorry that my oldest son was a toddler before Discovery Creek was around, right, because I would have brought him right in. His idea before we had our last baby was that a boa constrictor would be a really good household pet. We were told not to have animals with hair or fur, and so he thought that would be fine, and I had to explain that a boa constrictor might not be a really great idea.
Right. I have to agree with that. We want to stimulate appreciation for the natural world and stewardship or care of the natural world. Most parents will know that the puppy dog that lives next door to the ant that crawls across the floor is going to pique your child's curiosity. Now, the question is, what do you do with that once it's piqued, once the spark is there? And for us, the door to learning is open by introducing that animal. And our job as parents and as educators is then place that animal within the larger context of the natural world, how we depend on that animal, how that animal depends on us, and that we as humans are animals.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on nature education.
The excellent new book, Parents as Mentors, by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is a practical guide to bringing out the abilities in your child. Parents as Mentors is available at all bookstores.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today we are talking with Jacqueline Isle about nature education.
Jackie, how important are hands-on experiences versus viewing experiences like nature films?
Well, research has told educators that only 25% of learners out there learn from reading and from having information presented to them. 75% of learners out there learn by doing, learn by being in it. At Discovery Creek, we say we're hands-on, minds-on. We are in it. We are surrounded by it. To me, the natural environment is the primary context for learning. It is interdisciplinary. You can teach math, science, literature, anything by looking at the world around you. So I find that environmental education is naturally the best way to start.
What kinds of programs does Discovery Creek offer?
Discovery Creek offers a variety of programs to different audiences. On weekends, we focus on family audiences, and our goal there is to provide a context for learning that is intergenerational, that encourages parents to learn from their children and to learn with them. So our programs will focus on anything from an educator facilitating a nature walk that is all based on inquiry into the world around them, to exhibitions that we've developed that take concepts such as pollination and the watershed and making it tangible by becoming a drop of water and traveling the watershed, mm-hmm. by becoming a pollinator and pollinating a flower. Then we have a variety of other programs like Discovery Backpacks and Meet the Expert.
What is in a Discovery Backpack?
A Discovery Backpack is a theme-based backpack that is intended to be mobile. So a parent might say, ooh, there's a backpack about birds. Let's take that out. And they would go out into our garden or out on our trails, and inside that backpack would be the questions that a parent might want to ask their child, or a child might want to ask their parent, that they can work on together, that encourages them to look and feel and touch the world around them, to the tools that a scientist may use to examine the world around them, from binoculars to field guides to feathers of birds. So, I mean, birds are something that you can't really touch often, but we create that tangible experience for them. And then during the week, primarily we're offering programs to school children in the D.C. metropolitan area, 75% of whom are children from urban areas that we consider to be underserved in terms of their access to the natural environment.
So they come for like a formal program from their school?
Yes, yes, like a field trip on a school bus. However, what sets Discovery Creek apart, I think, in my experience as a museum educator, is that Discovery Creek's commitment is to providing deep experiences for children. And what that means is that our focus isn't necessarily on ever increasing our audience, but it's about providing the appropriate learning experience for the early learner. And what that means is that 85% of the children we work with, we see more than once during the year. We know that young children learn best when they're in the context of a strong relationship with the person that they're learning from, and that they have to feel a level of comfort, and that does not happen in 5 minutes. That happens over time. So our commitment is to forming relationships with the children that we serve, and that means multiple visits. So we often encourage several visits, and we design our programs so that several visits are imperative to the learning experience.
Jackie, this leads us really right into outdoor education in the schools and the curricula. Why is this kind of nature education so important? What's the difference between how children respond in a group of their peers and in a different kind of context?
Learning within the context of the natural environment offers educators an opportunity to weave in the disciplines. And we know from research that children learn best when what they're learning is relevant to them. What can they do? How are they a part of this world? What are the behaviors and actions that they exhibit that impact this world around them? It is a very powerful, value-laden learning experience for children. We found that not enough of it is going on. We start at ages 2, we go all the way up to age 11. You find more environmental education programs for the middle school and high school student than you do at this age. Mm-hmm. Often what you find are educators being a little bit apprehensive about the early learner's ability to learn the content. And for us, we're focusing a lot more on the context than the content. The content comes because the child has a natural interest in the world around them. One of the stories I tell about my own son, we live right down the street from the National Zoo. I bring him there all the time, even from before he was able to really understand what was going on. And now, of course, he knows. And one of our favorite places to go is the gorilla house, where we can see the gorillas and the orangutans. We love it in the wintertime because it's inside. There's a baby gorilla in there, which is about the same age as my son. He loves sitting there and watching him. And we're watching him. And all of a sudden, I see that his attention is completely focused on the floor. And I'm thinking, well, you know, we have this gorilla in front of us. And he says, Mama, there's an ant. And we spent 20 minutes in the gorilla house
at the National Zoo
watching an ant crawl across the floor. And it just, you know, it's funny. You try to provide these rich experiences for your children, and you realize that you really don't need the bells and whistles. The ant crawling across the floor
was
much more exciting to him than the baby gorilla in front of us. So
I think you never know where it's going to come from.
It's easy. It's That's easy funny. to start from yes. there.
Well, it's interesting. We had one adventure with one of my sons. We thought it would be a really wonderful idea to take him down to the waterfront to watch the crabs come off of the boats and all this kind of stuff. And one very nice fisherman put a crab on the deck and let my son see how it crawled sideways and all this stuff. And we thought we were providing him with this wonderful, wonderful experience. What he was really most interested in was the storm drains.
Right.
Watching the water go down the storm drains.
Right.
So
right.
You just never know. But no. if they're there, you don't know what they're going to pick
right.
up.
Right. And the point is that it doesn't have to be difficult. It doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't require great financial resources.
It could just be a storm drain.
It could just be a storm drain. It could just be an ant. It could just be a fistful of dirt. And that opens up a whole new world for a child.
Suppose we don't live in or near especially beautiful natural settings. How can we take advantage of what we do live near? Are there some little pointers that parents should keep in mind?
Well, I think that's a really good question, because we at Discovery Creek focus on urban children. And one of the things that we find important to what we do is we watch children increasingly become indoor animals. Their lives are increasingly surrounded by two-dimensional media, whether it be television, whether it be computers. We know from studies and we know from our own children that the amount of homework that they have to do has increased dramatically over the past few years. We also know that for safety reasons, children are not just let outside to play the way we were when we were younger. So no matter where you live, there are various reasons why children's access to the natural environment is limited, even if it is right outside the door or not. I think that even in a cemented environment, an urban environment where you might not consider it to be the standard of a national park, there are learning experiences to be had, that there will be trees somewhere, that there will be things growing between the cracks of the sidewalk. We at Discovery Creek are getting ready to do another exhibit called Urban Safari, and it's really about the nature that exists between the cracks in the sidewalk in our urban environments, and how to appreciate that, look for it, find it, document it, and be a part of it. Making a field guide.
What do you mean by a field guide for all the parents who are getting their pencils and their papers and
yeah,
thinking, oh,
right.
no?
Well, you know, you can go to the library with your child and check out Audubon field guides, where you see just basically a guide to all the types of things that might live in a particular ecosystem or habitat.
So a little notebook or a little bunch of 5x7 cards that the kid can write on or
Absolutely.
Make a picture and then staple together or put with a
right.
yarn.
And you can do it all by pictures. And then what you can do is then go to the library and do a little bit of research and find out, you know, what was that leaf? You can look for we don't encourage collecting, you know, leaves and things like that, because we're on National Park Service property. But you can do this on your sidewalk. Leaves fall. Let's look at the different shapes of leaves. Let's see if we can identify the tree by the leaf. Let's collect them. Looking for specimens. What type of soil is this? There are pieces of cement in this soil. It's been disturbed. And in more urban environments, what you're looking for is the balance between the built and the natural environment, and encouraging your child and yourself to think about how we live in existence with nature and what are some of the decisions that we as humans make that impact our natural world.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on nature education. For an audio cassette copy of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. Today we are talking with Jacqueline Isle about nature education. Jackie, what are some results that you've been able to see in children who've had opportunities for nature education over an extended period of time?
Well, for children who don't typically have access to hiking on trails and being surrounded by hardwood forest, we start with a child who exhibits a great deal of fear. This is a foreign environment for them. You might think that it's the most peaceful environment you can find. For a child who has not had any experiences in this environment, it carries with it a lot of unknowns. They might be more comfortable on a city street after dark than they would be on a hiking trail because they do not know what to expect. With that also comes attitudes toward the natural environment. And so you find children who see a bird and throw a rock at the bird. They've never been in this environment to be taught the values of environmental stewardship. So with the children that we work with that do not have access to natural environment experiences, and we provide with them long-lasting opportunities, multiple opportunities, we begin to see an increase in appreciation that is exhibited in their behavior by understanding that that bird is an important part of our ecosystem, and it helps to preserve the trees, or the trees help to preserve the animals that live within that tree. And we really begin to see behavioral changes. For lots of our children, they go home and they start telling their parents about what types of products they should buy in the grocery store and about recycling. And we have a lot of parents who come to us and say, you know, we're so grateful that you know, you're teaching our children, but my gosh, our whole family behavior had to change as a result of your programming. And we say, well, more power to the children. They do have decision-making power within their families. And it's these everyday actions that translate into environmental stewardship.
For our listeners' sake, other places around the country that don't have our Discovery Creek, mm-hmm. what do they have that parents can turn to?
Well, typically there's a nature center, and there may not be programs that you might find appropriate for the age of your child, but I think what you will find are the basic resources between hiking trails and perhaps even captive animals that you can study, that you should try to find your local naturalist or your local nature center, and that can be a source for great information. But again, this does not have to be difficult. This does not require great lengths to see nature. You just need to step outside your door. To follow that up, go to your local library. There are several resources that we depend on. The work of Joseph Cornell, there are wonderful books. Sharing the Joy of Nature and Sharing Nature with Children are two books that we depend on. These books will help parents to understand why it's so important to share nature with your children.
And the author's name again is?
Joseph Cornell.
Spelled just like the college.
That's right. Yeah. Parents will find him easy to read, easy to understand. Also, Discover Creek does have a website, so stay tuned for a parents page on our website. This is our plug, but stay tuned for more interactive opportunities on our website for children and parents.
What's the website?
It's www.discoverycreek.org.
You want to say that one more time?
www.discoverycreek.org, and Discovery Creek is one word. The other thing is to look at children's literature. There are many, many wonderful books that are fiction, that are the spark for a young child to get interested. I know from my own personal experience, we started reading a book called Stella Luna, and the author's name escapes me, but it's about a bat. And this personalized an animal that, you know, if we just saw a bat, you know, flying around, we don't really have a context for it, but because my son and I have been reading a book called Stella Luna, we can say, well, what is Stella Luna? Stella Luna is a bat. We might see a bat and then say, oh, how is that like Stella Luna? And we have a starting point. So I definitely think the storybooks that you can find in your local library are an excellent place to start with your children.
Another point that I think you were making earlier, which parents would probably find significant, is that when children have contact with creatures in the natural world, either through stories or through hands-on experiences, they seem to get a sense of empathy that they wouldn't have without that connection.
Absolutely.
So that's very important.
Absolutely.
That should sort of spill over into being with other living beings altogether.
Right. And the habitat that that animal needs to survive. Mm-hmm. So it's not just the animal itself, it's the ecosystem and how everything really depends on each other for survival. The examples are endless in terms of if one species is threatened, how the domino effect occurs. And that to me is just fascinating. If you can get that point across to your child, there is a much larger picture that they are creating about the world in which they live.
Mm-hmm. That's terrific. Well, we could go on and on.
Oh, yes, we
but
can.
But we do have a time frame here. Our special thanks to Jacqueline Isle for her wonderful insights into the nature of nature education. Thanks so much, Jackie.
Thank you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Parents as Mentors. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And tell us also what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world now, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning in from. Parents as Mentors is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about us and our book, Parents as Mentors, visit our website through our shortcut address, http://i.am/parentsperspective. There are no W's in our address. I'll repeat it, http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.